Earbuds, Melbourne's podcast network. Earbudsnetwork.com.
Welcome to Punta Vista bonus episode number 10. Lucky number 10. 10 is not a lucky number, I'm sorry. I take that back. I'm Andrew, and I'm here with Lucy.
Hello.
And Theo.
Hey.
We thought we might have a little chat today, continuing our series of film talks. Last time, Theo and I spoke about Korean-American, well, it was all kinds of countries, film Snowpiercer. And a lot of its extremely heavy-handed messaging around socialism and capitalism and communism and environmentalism, all of the isms and schisms that you could imagine. So today we thought we would come back and have a little chat about another extremely heavy-handed, message-laden film, Elysium, from 2013. Starring everybody's favorite Matt Damon. Matt Damon. So Lucy hadn't seen this before last night?
Yeah, I watched it last night. It's good. Good movie. Liked it.
Yep. Mm. Yep.
And that's the review.
That's pretty much it. That's all I have to say.
Goodbye, everybody.
I would have watched it earlier if I knew it had Diego Luna in it, who is my boyfriend. So
yeah.
I feel very awkward that I hadn't seen some of his work. So it was good.
Mm. Well, apology to friend of the show and, I don't know, another one of Lucy's boyfriends, Diego Luna.
He kind of looks like Chris Lilly.
Oh, my God. Mm. That's not.
He does. Just look at him.
Well, like in Mexican brown face.
Like brown maybe. Face.
I don't see race, so I can't tell. Like,
okay. Oh, terrible.
So Elysium popped up during what I seem to remember was a bit of a boom in sci-fi movies and horror movies around the time that seem to reflect like the whole Occupy Wall Street, We Are the 99% kind of vibe that was going on in the world at the time. Mm. Luckily, all that's over and everyone has equality now.
Totally.
Yeah, we fixed that.
We don't really have to worry about it. Yeah. Well, people took away the appropriate lessons from these movies.
Mm.
And as is usually the case, Hollywood solved all of the world's problems.
Mm.
And here we are.
We are.
Here we are, happy, safe, everybody has healthcare. We took the advice of Elysium, and everybody has healthcare now.
They all do. We all do.
Yeah.
The world is a good place.
Thank goodness. So it's set near future, 2154, and I didn't realize that it is set in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I think it's half the movie before they actually mention it, like... So, like, it's just this, like, cultureless, sort of, you know, vast wreck of a place. And I had written down here that Matt Damon was, like, whitewashed. And then I had to cross it out when they revealed, like, halfway through the movie as LA. And it turns out I'm the real racist.
Oh, wow. You really are.
Owned by diversity. Yeah, because I remember watching, I've seen it several times and I don't even remember them saying, this is LA. But yeah, I remember watching it and thinking, well, yeah, this could be South Africa or, you know, somewhere in America or any just bombed out slum looking place, basically.
And everyone's all poor.
In society.
Everyone's fucked up and poor.
Very poor. It's basically one great big planet-wide favela at this point.
It's basically LA in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the skyscraper-like metaphor of everybody living up in the clouds, there is a literal city in the clouds, Elysium, which is like a little space station habitat kind of thing, in Earth's low orbit, where all the rich toffs live, the 1%.
They never really show what the appeal, apart from not being, like, an awful place where you die, is of Elysium, because it's sort of very sterile and dry, and there's nothing really to do there. It's sort of like a floating Canberra.
And they can cure everything. They can just cure your cancer.
That's, right.
That's true, though. That's absolutely true.
Well, yeah. We'll take the cancer cure. But It's an interesting movie to me because, you know, the protagonist of the film, Matt Damon's character, Max.
Max Damon. Max Damon.
Yep, is very, very convincing as like an ex-gangbanger type, with like neck tattoos and stuff.
Yeah, but then the head of a baby stacked on top.
Yes, just the head of a nice, beautiful baby man, just popped right on top of that. Really convincing stuff. So yeah, you know, he's the protagonist, and interestingly, he winds up sort of getting pulled into the plot of the larger plot of the movie through needing healthcare through his workplace, which he does not get. Well, even before that point, you know, he has a run-in with police, who at this point are literal automatons for the state.
They're scary. They're scary robot police.
And you know what? What fucks me up about that is, apart from the fact that they're, like, you know, the whole, like, Blue Lives Matters crowd would love that shit. They would love it if cops couldn't die because they were robots and they could just go around smashing people up at will. I feel like there are also a whole ton of liberals who would support that too.
Probably.
Who would go, yes, Silicon Valley, solving policing.
Yeah, I think for the people whose problem with the police is that they're just not clinical enough in their approach to brutalizing. Yeah. Whereas these guys, obviously, they obey their protocols. My protocol is to stomp
to
on
the
poor
letter.
People. It's very heavy-handed.
You know, Matt Damon's character has a record, and he gets frisked while he's waiting in line for his, I don't know, whatever it was, his transport to work. And he sasses one of the robots a little, who just immediately chucks him down and smashes his forearm with a baton, breaking it in half. And the thing that gets me about this movie is that so many of the situations that Matt Damon's character gets put in are just real-life situations for people right now in one of the richest, most developed country in the world. You know, it's still a country where if you don't have healthcare and your arm gets broken, then you're both immediately plunged into debt, or you can't actually access care for that.
Yeah.
And there's also the very strong possibility that you will lose your job. You'll lose your tenuous grip on employment because you weren't able to go to work because your arm got broken.
Pretty much.
That's just already a real situation.
No, I was reading the director, apparently. This is, like, a lot of the controversy. The director was asked in an interview about whether this was, like, a dystopian future world, and he was like, no, this is, like, the world as it is right now. So people are very mad about that. People are angry.
Well, a lot of people don't like hearing how it actually is, I guess.
Don't. If you Google Elysium socialist propaganda, there's some angry people. Elysium is an anti-white open borders propaganda film.
Oh, my goodness.
Huh.
Was the Elysium movie racist propaganda, white people are evil, etc., etc.? So people did not like this film.
No, I'm thinking of it when he has to go to the hospital and, like, he's talking to the like robotic head, asking him what the problem is.
Oh yeah,
which just seems very nightmarish. But yeah, you know, he goes to his job, where the boss takes one look at him and goes, "Oh well, if you can't work like that, I'll get someone else to work for you." And he immediately has to say, "No, I'm fine, and I can work." Which, you know, again is reminiscent of all of these stories that get bandied about by, you know, capitalist companies now, like, was it Uber or Lyft?
These, you know, heartwarming stories of she gave birth in her car and
Jesus Christ.
Picked up a passenger 5 minutes later. You know, it's not quite that, but, you know, the kind of
things. Oh, no, it was about a woman who picked up passengers. She picked up a ride on her way to taking herself to the hospital to deliver her own baby.
Wow.
And that she was back at work, you know, within a day or two after that. And they talk about it like it's this sunny story of achievement.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, what a great work ethic that she got straight back to that, as opposed to what kind of world are people living in where unless they make those choices and do things like that, that they genuinely can't get by.
Mm-hmm.
So Max Damon's boss tells him, you know, I'll get someone else to work if you can't. And in what I can only assume is a thoroughly de-unionized workforce and workspace in this movie, there's a malfunction with one of the areas that he's working in, and, you know, something's broken and they need to fix it. And again, he's immediately threatened with losing his employment if he doesn't get everything running. And instead, there is an accident. Max is trapped inside a chamber and gets blasted with a big dose of radiation, which he is told will kill him in 5 days unless he gets access to the free and instant and easy medical treatment that is available to all rich white devils in Elysium.
Mm-hmm. And the robot's really mean. He, like, throws the drugs at him. He's not good. The robots are not nice.
Shockingly, robots are not the most caring physicians.
No, apparently not. I don't like this future.
I'd like to give a shout-out to Sharlto Copley's beard.
Mm?
Sharlto Copley plays a bad guy in this.
Is he the South African man?
He is the South African. The true villains of the world.
Yeah, he's sort of introduced early on as like a Blackwater mercenary, sort of ready to do the dirty work of blowing up refugees that the government won't do. And I'd say that he's actually the closest that this movie has to having an aesthetic.
Hmm.
It's just his whole thing. It's hard to put your finger on, but he's definitely having a lot of fun and really chewing the scenery.
Which I enjoy. I feel like he relished being a bad guy in this.
Yeah, it's great to watch.
But yes, he's basically employed, as Theo has suggested, to be the Blackwater-type mercenary who is shooting down the refugee ships attempting to get to Elysium to access this healthcare.
Yeah, they just blow them up. They just destroy them.
Yeah. I can only imagine Peter Dutton cheering with a
absolutely
large erection.
And then immediately turning the movie off.
I don't want to see how it ends.
That's the denouement and time for bed.
Yeah, I found Jodie Foster's character interesting as well, because I feel like she is meant to be like a real distillation of kind of the globalist neoliberal ideal.
Mm.
I've got written down, she really sucks in this.
She does. She sucks.
The character, the acting?
The acting. Because, like, I mean, I think usually with, like, Jodie Foster, she's usually playing, like, and she does it here as well, but, like, usually it's a very down-to-earth, like, Southern or Virginian kind of woman trying to make it as the only competent person in a man's world kind of thing.
I feel like you have only seen her in Silence of the Lambs.
No, I mean, I saw her in Arrival. I saw her in Jurassic Park. Okay. And also, she was really good
in
Twister.
She is not in Jurassic Park.
So, you know.
She is not in either of those movies.
I think you might have to look it up. I don't know.
You are thinking of Laura Dern in Jurassic Park.
He's being racist against whites again.
Against white blonde women. You're thinking of Helen Hunt in Twister.
Yeah. No, wow. I mean, still yet to be seen.
This is worse than Wayans Gate.
But, I don't know, I kind of
it
just...
It is, well...
I felt like she was kind of doing, like, a cut-rate Tilda Swinton here.
She actually, she's done quite a run of characters that are very sort of, you know, condemning of capitalist excesses in recent years. And some of them are a bit heavy-handed and on the nose, particularly movies that she has directed herself. But she was also in that Spike Lee movie Inside Man, where she was kind of the fixer, you know, who was hired by the bank to come in and just kind of make the whole problem go away. And so it was a very similar sort of cold, I want to sweep this all under the rug kind of affect. But one of the things that I did find interesting about her character in this film was like the accent that she had, which was this kind of weird
it was awful.
It was just this kind Well, it's just this kind of weird fusion of like British and
French and French.
South
I mean,
African
she's...
and French and all just kind of yeah. It was all kind of hoity-toity upper class, like colonial accents all mixed together.
Mm.
But she's a stone cold bitch in this movie, guys.
Yeah, she's not good.
Do you think she's Hillary?
Ooh, hadn't really thought about that one.
I'm kidding. Let's not be more Bernie bro.
Mm.
She's got a short blonde bob.
I mean, she is Hillary.
That's good enough for me.
She is Hillary, but you know.
What are your other socialist observations on this film, guys?
Well, it is very like immigration based. I think a lot of it does have like parallels with border policy and that type of thing. Like,
yeah, I mean, that was my biggest takeaway.
They're just blowing up refugees,
and especially also that it's like that you've got to pay to get up there as well. They're very upfront. That's like one of the very first things. The movie basically opens with Max Damon pointing at Elysium and leaning over to his future wife and whispering, "That's Elysium." and you've got to pay to get up there. So everybody's
poor.
One day I'll be rich enough.
Yeah, and he's very clear about, you know, this is the haves and the have-nots, and it's mostly about the have-nots, you know. To me, that's the real core of it. I'm not really sure I get, like, too much else of the... It's certainly not about socialism in the way that, like, Snowpiercer was about socialism, like, very, very directly.
it was about snowshialism.
Snowshialism. I mean, he does kind of get into the dehumanization of being, like, at-will employed. And the thing where he goes into the parole office and instead of talking to people, you know, you talk to robots and and you just have to work your way through the system to get the least bad outcome that is, you know, programmed in there for you. And, you know, obviously that's not too far away from, you know, what people try and do with Centrelink now. And, you know, by delegitimizing these programs and...
Well, like the neoliberal obsession with means testing.
With means testing and automating to the nth degree. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and yeah, the perfect example of that in Australian... society in recent memory has been the whole Centrelink robo-debt scandal.
Absolutely.
Has been just this attempt to just completely automate debt recovery by just combing and cross-referencing different government records and without having any actual human look at them and say, hey, should we just check even slightly if this is correct? They just blasted out tens of thousands of letters to people saying, hey, you owe the government $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 from 6 years ago, and the burden of proof is on you to prove that you
just
don't actually owe us that
and
money.
And just call up this number, which will never be answered. You have no recourse whatsoever, but you must act now. And that's sort of like, I mean, I think he managed to convey that in about 2 minutes with that parole office scene, which I quite enjoyed with the where he's talking into. It's like a repurposed. Is it a repurposed like? Fast food order clown head thing with like the microphone.
Yeah.
They remind me of that or like one of the clown heads at a carnival, you know,
exactly.
That you put the ball into.
Yeah, and he's just choosing the options that he thinks is he's gonna get out of it without ending up in jail or losing his job, you know, even though he's the victim of police oppression. And I think it's really just the first 45 minutes, a lot like District 9, where they kind of get all of the themes out of the way first. They set it all up to say, hey, here's the divide between the rich and the poor. Here's the refugees trying to get in. Here's the way we clinically oppress those. Cool, you got it all. Now it's time for some explosions.
And they were good explosions, too.
Yeah, they were good. I enjoyed it.
Serviceable explosions, yeah.
I will say that I think there is some top-notch violence in that movie.
I like the robot violence. I find the robots very, very terrifying. I had bad dreams. I had bad robot dreams.
There you go. No, I think there is definitely something terrifying about the idea of yeah, automated policing and to, like, to me it's the nightmarish, very natural progression of reliance on things like drone surveillance. Yep. And that sort of stuff. Where, yeah, the idea being that you can create an industry around it, you can take away that human risk, or at least that the risk to human life is transferred to, you know, the appropriate kind of human, the appropriate class of human, that people are willing to have risk applied to, as opposed to people who are serving to, you know, sort of uphold a police state's interests.
Oh, that's something that we should probably touch on as well, this whole kind of setup, it seems like employment on Earth, or at least the employment that they were willing to show, is all to serve the defense industry of Elysium. So you know, they're all complicit in their own, you know, downtroddenness, because they have no other option. You either work for the people that are, you know, stomping on you, or you starve and die.
Yeah, it's a little bit similar theme-wise to the remake of Total Recall. I'm not sure if either of you
have not
seen
it.
I think it's worth a look, personally, if only because it doesn't attempt to just be a note-for-note remake of the Paul Verhoeven Arnold Schwarzenegger version, which in and of itself bears very little resemblance to the source material anyway, as far as I can tell. Whereas the remake is a much more kind of direct translation of the source material, and it plays it a lot more straight. A lot of the Paul Verhoeven version is about the ambiguity of whether or not the lead character, you know, whether or not he actually is a secret agent, or whether he's just having memories that were implanted into him and that sort of stuff. Whereas in the remake, they just go, oh no, yeah, he's legit. And they make it quite clear and explicit. But what's also different about it plot-wise is that, due to environmental disasters, the majority of the planet's populace is now gathered in sort of what's left of Australia. And on the other side of the world, in a small part of what's left of, like, the UK, is where all the rich folk live in their nice clean utopia. And there is a massive tunnel that goes through the core of the earth, which transports workers from the poor, shitty slum part of the world, to the nice clean rich part on a daily basis. And in a very similar fashion, much of the work that is available to people is working in the factories that make the roboticized police and military forces that are then used to police those same people. So it's interesting. Mm. It's interesting. It's not perfect, but it's technically set in Australia, so slam dunk for us.
Nice.
Hell yeah, they remembered us.
But yeah, so very, very similar thematically in that sense. I suppose the difference with Elysium is that they kind of have a very, they really get to just tie a neat little bow on it at the end, don't they?
Yeah, it's all very predictably neat, I think. I'm sure we'll get to it, but
a little too neat. One day we'll all get free healthcare bots.
In the house. Bays. Yeah.
In the house, I assume.
I hope they're nicer.
Couldn't. Well, like, it really does have to make you wonder, because it's not like the med bay things are something where, like, you know, you have to book them 6 months in advance, and you have to sit in the thing for like 2 weeks while it reconstructs your.
Yeah, it's like once your cancer's cured, what's it in the house for?
Well, you get in it and it goes zap, and then you're done.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like you get zapped once, surely you can, like, surely you'd be tripping over it the whole time. You'd be fucking like, oh, I spilled my coffee on the med bay. If only there was a better way.
I'd be trying to hack my little medbay thing and see if I could, like, grow another dick with it.
Yeah, third one.
Because, you know, if they can grow back existing limbs, who's to say you can't grow some extra limbs?
It's true.
And that's going to lead to problems. It's probably going to void the warranty.
Probably.
So the thing that was unclear to me, right, so he gets zapped, right, he gets irradiated, so he's got 5 days, and so immediately he goes, oh, well, I need to get to Elysium, I need to get in that med bay. But of course, mm-hmm. he runs into his, childhood girlfriend who's a nurse at the hospital, and her daughter has leukemia. And as a plot device, it's like, and then suddenly he's got to get her to Elysium. So he may as well not have ever gotten irradiated, like, plot-wise in the first place. You don't need both. And I don't know, I think he wanted the emotional kind of impact of this child being in danger or something. I don't know. It never made any sense to me. Like,
I guess.
Terrible child actor. I'm sure she's trying her best, but, it's a professional's game.
Wow.
Could have done without it.
Wow.
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 Terrible review there for a small child from Theo. Hey, kid, get your shit together.
Look, this is going on the Patch Show, and she can't afford it yet.
Theo thinks your performance was dog shit. Just shout out enemy of the show, Emma
girl.
Tremblay.
Ah.
Her name is Emma Tremblay, and Theo thinks that she is fucking pathetic.
I didn't say that. I mean, I do think that, but...
I thought she was great. I thought she was a dream. But I'm kind and generous of spirit.
I don't have kids and I don't see them as people.
Oh, my kids can't act or anything, if that's what you're getting.
Yeah, neither could this one. So.
Oh, what good are they?
Hey, who would like a little bit of trivia about this film?
I love some trivia.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. the main role was first offered to terrible, shitty actor and musician Ninja from D'Antwoord, who then shows up in Neil Blomkamp's Chippy.
Right.
But the role was then offered to rapper Eminem. Eminem wanted the film to be shot in Detroit, and that was not an option for the two studios.
What a movie that would have been, huh?
Oh, imagine Elysium in Detroit with Eminem.
That would have been incredible.
Oh, I absolutely would have watched that. I wish Eminem was in more movies.
Same.
Yep.
He's very good.
Just as an aside, if you need a little cheering up for whatever reason, just go and search Ninja's emails from the leaked Sony hack. And they are the most pathetic, self-serving, ridiculous thing. It's like, I don't know. Just go and look them up. It's like
just a real piece of shit.
Just kicking around the most shittiest ideas. He's a real idiot. I wish I could describe him better.
I could do a whole episode about how much I do not like D'Antwoord. And, like, the entire thing is, like, one extremely long-form performance art project, too. That's the worst thing, is that they were, like, they were musicians with some totally different bag for ages, and then they started doing that as a shtick, and people went, oh, cool, they're, like, South African gangsters. And they went, yes. Yes, for 15 years, yes.
I hate South Africans. Oh, that's the acceptable racism.
Fucking, yes. I absolutely agree.
I think all villains should be South African, because you just listen to them and it's like, oh, oh, God, Jesus.
But the last place I worked, there was just one South African guy there, and he'd, like, speak up during board meetings and shit, and I would just be not really paying attention, but suddenly perk up and just go, who the fuck is this villain?
Who the fuck do you think you are, mate?
Who is in here trying to get us to commit a war crime, probably? Ugh. Ugh.
Ugh.
So in the end... Neil Blomkamp says about his own film, Elysium, quote, I feel like I fucked it up.
Okay.
Yeah. I feel like ultimately the story is not the right story. I still think this satirical idea of a ring filled with rich people hovering above the impoverished earth is an awesome idea. I love it so much. I almost want to go back and do it correctly. Do not do that, Neil.
Please, please don't make it.
Do not go back and do this movie again.
I don't know. Was it that bad? I liked it.
Also, why does he think he fucked it up?
He says, I just think the script wasn't... I just didn't make a good enough film is ultimately what it is. I feel like I executed all the stuff that could be executed, like costume and set design and special effects very well. I agree.
Yep.
But ultimately, it was all resting on a somewhat not totally formed skeletal system. So the script just wasn't there. The story wasn't fully there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think you described him as like the M. Night Shyamalan of sci-fi, right?
Yeah.
And I think he has a lot of things in common where he kind of had this slam dunk movie to begin with. But he's not a disciplined enough writer, I don't think. And if he had someone else writing for him or telling him that his ideas were shit, I think he'd probably come out with with much better movies, because technically, like you said, they're great. Looks good. It's good to look at. It's pretty big widescreen kind of.
Got a bunch of cool ideas in it.
Yeah.
Like sci-fi wise, a lot of the stuff, like the exoskeletons and the rail guns, and like a lot of the weapons that the mercenaries had. A lot of those things were just all these cool little individual ideas. But yeah, my issue with him as a filmmaker is that like you're saying about the comparison to M. Night Shyamalan. M. Night Shyamalan had his first movie and it had this great big twist at the end. And that was like such a revelation to people that it turned into, you know, like the marketing material for the film and the whole thing. And then he made another movie and it had a great big twist at the end. And everybody went, huh, okay. See, you're kind of doing this twist thing. And then he made a third movie and it had a great big twist at the end. And like, personally, I think that M. Night Shyamalan has made some really great films, like immaculately crafted films. Mm. I think that the Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, and Signs are all fantastic movies.
Absolutely.
What happened? It just turned into a thing for people of going, oh, he's just a one-trick pony. So people went into his movies going, okay, well, I'm looking for the twist. I'm examining every part of this plot with the idea of what's the reveal going to be. So people stopped thinking about the movies while they were watching them. Then it took a really sour turn into when he made that Lady in the Water, which had a character in it who was a film critic who was the bad guy.
Okay.
It had all of this incredibly on the nose, explicit, like effectively whining at film critics for having negative things to say about him in the actual film, which was a really bad look. And then he went right off the rails with making that last Airbender live action movie and After Earth with Will Smith and his weenie
kid. And the one where everyone kept killing themselves was a real piece of shit.
So it was the same thing for me with Neil Blomkamp, where he made a short, which was a short of District 9, and then he got to make a feature length of District 9. And that just slammed you over the head with the theme, apartheid. And then he made Elysium, and that just slammed you over the head with the theme apartheid. And then he made Chappie, which just slammed you over the head with the theme apartheid. And, you know, it's all just classism and separation of societies. And yeah, it's just that kind of thing where it just makes me go, dude, just widen the scope. Just widen the scope a bit. Pick another theme.
Do something else, mate.
Let someone else write a movie for you.
Yeah, maybe. Absolutely. Yeah. I agree.
So that's where we're at.
Yeah, I agree. We all know better than film directors. We would all make better film directors.
Absolutely. Why do you think we're doing a podcast?
Yeah,
come on.
God.
One of the main roles of podcasts is to let film directors know how
suck.
You would have done it better.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. Any last stray observations about Elysium which I feel like we've probably given a slightly bummer rap than,
no, I mean,
than I would care to. I like it.
Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah, it was good. I don't think it was as good as District 9, to be quite honest. Like, if you judge it on the same terms, I don't feel like he managed to capture lightning in a bottle like he did with District 9. I think, like, you can really feel with District 9 that he was working on a smaller budget and still managed to make all this great stuff happen within those constraints. And I think given basically an unlimited budget, everything's bigger, everything's wider screened, and it kind of loses a little of that scrappiness. Mm. I don't know, it's hard to define where, like, everything looks great in this and it's all serviceable, but, like, I don't feel like any of the guns are loud enough or, like, the action is punchy enough. One thing I do like is that people explode constantly in it, which seems to be another one of
this. Yeah, there's a lot of exploding.
I really enjoyed Charlton Copley's face getting just seared off by a guy.
Yeah. I reckon, that's probably the best moment in the movie, and I reckon that's one of the things I like most about him as a director is his, not cruelty to his characters, but, like, his ability to put his characters through anything physically. And I was talking to a mate about this the other day, where it's sort of like he shares, I reckon, a lot more with, like, horror directors in that regard, where in his movies, his characters tend to get just, like, blown apart and, like, really fucked up. Like, you know, they make it pretty obvious that, like, Matt Damon's getting his bones drilled into and what have you to stick this exoskeleton on, and then he's, like, suffering real damage to do it, and they blow off Charlton Copley's face only for him to, like, come back. And it kind of, I like that about it as an action movie, that you feel like none of the characters are truly safe at any point. And, like, yeah, he spends the whole time of District 9 just messing up Charlton Copley, like, bit by bit, making him chop his own arm off and stuff. It's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, and it had the most predictable heel turn in movie history.
What was that?
With him stabbing Jodie Foster in the neck.
Oh, right.
Because when I'm like, hiring mercenaries, what I like to do is get in a room alone with them. As me being, like, one of the most powerful people on Earth, I love to just put myself in a room alone with a mercenary and then tell him how bad he's doing. I think it's good.
Well, she got her just desserts, didn't she?
She sure did.
A knife to the neck, just like Lucy would like to do to Hillary Clinton.
Totally. Violence against Hillary Clinton is definitely what I'm calling for.
Well, it's on record now.
Goddamn.
All right, guys, should we leave it there?
Yes. I also just want to say Diego Luna looked very nice with his long hair and his fake tattoos.
Crystal's best character yet.
God damn it.
Yeah. I'd like to give him a nice cuddle. He looked very cuddly.
He did, and he was very supportive when Matt Damon was getting, like, shit drilled into his body. I thought that was nice.
It's a good friend.
I think they jacked each other off. Like, I think that's definitely implied heavily.
Well, he couldn't move his arms for a few days.
That's true.
Would you like Diego Luna to be supportive of you while you're getting drilled in your body? Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
All right, folks. Hey. Let's leave it there. And feel very free to let us know in the old comments and that sort of thing if there are other movies that you think would be a good idea for us to examine thematically in this sense.
I think someone said Children of Men the other day.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I could definitely get into that. I haven't watched that in quite a while, and I would like to do it again. All right. Let's do it. Mm-hmm. That'll be the next one.
Awesome.
Oh, one last thing to touch on. Lucy will be departing for Europe.
I am pissing off. So, unfortunately, well, Ben's pissed off too. So, it's just you guys.
True.
It's just you guys.
Just us. I think we're going to get Ben this weekend, but nice. But we will be without Lucy's sweet tones for 4 weeks or something.
Terrible. So, I'll send you some texts to read out on the show.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Good.
I'll ask some questions.
Excellent. All right. Well, we'll see everybody next week.
Bye.
All right.
Bye-bye.
See ya.